Welcome to the Know Yourself podcast. This is Dan Udell. This is episode 90, can you believe it? I had a lot of feedback from the last episode, episode 89, about panic attacks. So thanks to everyone that listened to that and really appreciate it. If you listened to last week's episode, you would have known that I've got Aoife coming on the show today. Aoife is a integrative therapist, and I'm really excited to have her on the show because I've never had anyone that's an integrative therapist on, and I've talked about it a number of times because it's actually the kind of style and approach that I want to take on when I become a therapist. And I'm just really excited to have her on, and we've spoken on the phone, and she's an absolutely lovely person, and I can't wait for you to all meet her. So we've got together here in the morning. It's kind of like 9 a.m. at the moment, and we're gonna have a bit of a chat, and hopefully this helps you find out a little bit more about integrative therapy and a little bit more about Aoife as well. So Aoife, thanks for joining me on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Dan.
No problem at all. You're very welcome here, and we love having therapists on the show because of the kind of light that they shed on their world, and all the different bits of information that they bring from their experience, and just absolute pleasure having you on.
Well, thank you, and a very nice introduction indeed. I think that sometimes kind of the world of therapy can seem a little bit secretive, so I'm always happy to talk to people who are interested in learning more about what it's all about, really.
I've kind of found that as well. I mean, when I was doing my training, the kind of group of people that you're training with, they all become very kind of open, and you end up sharing lots of things. And it's strange how as soon as you get out of the room, that kind of stops. I found myself not really telling much about what was going on in the kind of the classes with my family and stuff like that. You do kind of become very insular almost.
That was exactly my experience as well. I trained in Ireland, and I was home a few weeks ago, and I met up with my peer group. So, on my first weekend of training, we got asked to go into groups depending on, geographically, or, whoever could meet up at a certain date and time. And we were encouraged to meet up every month to 6 weeks just to kind of check in and see how we were getting on, and, share our experience, talk about books, and, just a kind of wide ranging thing. And the group that I trained with, we still continued to meet after we had finished training, and I moved to London, and we stayed in contact in a WhatsApp group, and I hadn't seen most of them in ages, but I was home a few weeks ago and we had a chance to meet up, and it was the same kind of feeling, this kind of shared experience that other people just don't quite understand, and it's a very special thing.
It's very intimate, isn't it?
It sure is. I mean, a huge part of my training was to do group therapy, and, we spent whole Sundays where there'd be 11 of us who, we're training, we're all in the same class, but then we're also part of this group where we're sharing very intimate and important things about ourselves, and it was very special. And, then the facilitator would go, okay, well, it's lunchtime, and we'd all go down to have our lunch together and kind of be like chatting about how our weekend was going after somebody had been talking about something. We'd all been crying, or very, very odd dynamic, but it was wonderful.
It sounds very special, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember feeling very kind of, I look back very fondly on those times in class, and you do get something really special. Like, those people, you tell things that, you might not have even told your family or friends.
Absolutely.
It really is a special group.
Yeah, I mean, things that you probably or possibly never articulated. That was one of the hardest things that I found, because I felt like I was quite closed off going into my training, and the thing that I was dreading the most was the group, because it meant having to share and be present with, it was 11 people, so it's not that small, but actually by the end of my training it was the part that I had enjoyed the most, and I got the most out of. It's really fantastic.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So did you start when you did your training, was that integrative approach that your training was based on?
Yeah, so it was integrative and humanistic. So, I mean, it's a bit of a minefield when you're kind of going, trying to figure out what sort of therapy you're going to study, where you're going to study, you know. And I spent a lot of time researching all the different modalities, or some of the different modalities. I'm sure I didn't even touch on all of them when I was in the kind of elementary stages of research. And what drew me to the course that I did, I liked the idea of the integrative approach, but also that the course that I was doing, you know, it was kind of advertised as being very experiential. So, you know, there was a lot of kind of hands-on work, and to me, obviously the theoretical side is hugely important, but, you know, I can do as much reading as I want outside of the lectures and outside of the class, but to kind of be doing a lot of work while I'm there in the centre with everybody, that was very important to me. So that was kind of one of the main things that drew me to it, along with the fact that it was integrative. So you were kind of learning about different modalities and how they work together.
Right. Mm. Was there a particular approach that stuck out to you within the integrative approach? I've kind of experienced this. There's, 'cause my level three was very integrative. And I found myself leaning towards certain approaches and then finding certain approaches that I didn't like or I wanted to avoid altogether.
Oh, what ones didn't you like?
I didn't like CBT to begin with. Mm-hmm. 'Cause we learnt about REBT, which is it's rational emotive behaviour therapy. Just for the audience that doesn't know what the acronyms mean.
Oh, yeah.
And I just felt CBT was too clunky, too logical for me. But the more time I spent kind of reflecting on it and the more time I spent looking into it, the more I actually found it valuable.
I actually kind of agree. I felt similarly when I started my training as well. And over the last few years, I've kind of focused a little bit more on CBT and been learning more about it to integrate that into my practice.
Because, like, the NHS do it as, like, a standard now.
They do indeed.
So, like, if you go through CAMHS or some of the other kind of services that the NHS offers, I think that's, like, the standard, like, course. It's, like, 6 to 12 weeks of CBT. I've got particular points of view on that, but I think it's great because I think for the majority of people, CBT is a big help. You know, it definitely helps because you've got a lot of people out there that have got, anxiety, panic attacks. You know, there's a lot of people out there that have got phobias as well. So I really, really think that it helps there.
Through the IAPT service from the NHS, I mean, it's time limited, and obviously CBT is very helpful in the short term, more so than other therapies. They do offer some counselling, but it does feel like the go-to, certainly, yeah, the kind of first offering is usually CBT.
Yeah. Before I go down too much of a rabbit hole, because I was just going to unload then and start talking about my point of view.
Go for it.
I want to ask you, I ask this with kind of most guests that come on, because it's really fascinating for the audience to get some context for you. Give us your kind of origin story, your kind of comic book one of your volume, where you kind of started out on some people start out on their therapy journey first and then become therapists. Or some people kind of become therapists and they fall in love with the process and they just have to take on therapy as part of their training, and that's one of the first times they actually get therapy. You don't have to talk about that in too much detail if you don't want to, but just, how did Aoife get to where she is now? What does that look like?
Sure, well, I guess if you're looking at it as a one or the other in terms of the way you described it, I fall into the latter category. So, and a lot of people that had kind of come to it from having experienced therapy and then realized it was something that they were really interested in. But I came at it from the other angle. I mean, it's definitely not a kind of linear story to get us where we are, which may be kind of relevant in terms of the way that therapy works as well. I mean,
yeah, very true.
So I kind of mirror that in some ways. I was always interested in psychology, and I really don't actually even remember when that started. I had it in my head from when, I don't know, I was a teenager, that psychology was what I was going to study at university, and I was interested in people, learning more about myself, I think, really, on reflection. And so psychology was the plan. And then I went to university. I was very young when I finished school. I was 16, which is quite young in Ireland anyway. And I started in university when I was 17. Again, quite young, and started into some classes, took some psychology classes, and quickly realised that I had kind of jumped in too soon. So I left university and I worked for a year, and then I went back and studied something completely different. I studied Italian literature and classical civilization. So I went down a completely different route. But my experience at university the first time around had kind of made me realise that what I wanted to do was study something that I kind of already had an interest in. And I had, you know, I always loved languages. I'd studied classical civilization at school. So I decided to kind of continue down that path. And it was wonderful. I mean, I had a fantastic time at university. And then I left and I went traveling, traveled the world for about 7 or 8 months.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was an absolutely amazing experience. But, you know, I was fresh out of university, so hadn't really got any sort of plan. And so I came back after finishing university, or after my travels, and into an Ireland that looked very different to the one that I had left. So I left in 2007, came back in 2008, which was kind of right when the economy tanked.
Oh, gosh,
You know, when I had left, it was kind of just a given that there'd be lots of opportunities when I came back, because that's the way the world was to me at the time. You know, everything was great, everybody had jobs, everybody was studying. And so I just thought that it would be, I mean, I basically didn't think about it, you know, I was just kind of assumed it would be exactly the same. And I came back and everything looked very different, and I realized, gosh, it's going to be very hard to find work, you know. So that's what I did. I took a job working in recruitment, kind of on the administrative side, and you know, decided, okay, well, what am I going to do now? Because I enjoyed the job, but I knew it wasn't something that I wanted to kind of do long term.
Yeah.
So I found myself getting drawn back to this kind of idea of learning more about people and how we work and how we relate to each other. I think that was the part of it that really was most appealing to me. And just on a whim, I signed up for this, like, it sounds very old fashioned now, even though it wasn't that long ago, it was like 10 years ago, this kind of correspondence course in the basics of counselling skills. So I had to, like, post my answers back, you know, you kind of get stuff in the post.
Yeah.
It makes me feel, sound very old, but actually I think it was just a bit of an archaic system at the time. And so it was, you know, I was just had this one book on counselling skills, and I was kind of hooked. I really loved it. So I thought, okay, what can I do next? And so I found this college in Dublin called the Tivoli Institute that were offering this foundation course in psychotherapy and counselling. And a big part of the course was that you had to do 25 sessions of talk therapy. Which obviously now when you kind of, you know, you go on to do further training, that becomes a core part of it. But this was all completely new to me. I had no idea that this would be part of it, you know.
Yeah.
For some reason, it really appealed to me, because I had never been to therapy before. And it kind of, I don't know, it seemed like a bit of a terrifying prospect, but something that I was also really, really interested in doing. So I jumped in and I interviewed for the course, got on the course, started doing my 25 sessions of therapy. I absolutely loved it. And then I signed up to do the professional diploma with the Tivoli Institute, which is where I did all my training.
Right.
And that, yeah, I mean, that was kind of a roundabout way of answering your question. But that's how I kind of got into it. And it's one of these, things, I mean, I don't know if you feel the same way or other therapists that you've spoken to, but I mean, I kind of feel like I had no idea what I was getting into. You know, I knew that I was interested in learning about the human condition and therapy, but what you actually kind of get out of doing a therapy training course is just something like you could never believe. I mean, you learn so much about yourself and who you are and who you are in the world and the kind of therapist then that you want to be as a result of that. And you know, I think it's training like you really don't get in any other profession. You know, it's absolutely amazing.
It's really interesting. My therapist actually always says the same thing to me about the training. I always get like a 50-50 mix from people about how they kind of what they're expecting before they start. Like some people know exactly what they're going into, and then some people like self are a bit like, wow, this is something new. I know I've got a passion for it. I'm just going to go in like, you know, head first and see what this looks like. And just to your credit, by the way, listening back to your story, you were obviously very self-aware at a young age. You know, the thing that stuck out most for me was when you were talking about how you started off with psychology, but you knew you weren't ready yet. I just absolutely love that. And I think that's such a display of some of the natural abilities that you've got. This is what I mean sometimes when I tell people, like, therapy is something that you can learn, but some people have just got a natural abundance of some of those skills, and I think you're definitely a showcase of that.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, I mean, I guess that's true. I did have the capacity to kind of self-reflect, and I did know, I knew that just even kind of just being in the university setting, like I, you know, I was a grown-up 17-year-old, but I mean, still in terms of existing in the universe, I was very, very young and just not ready. And you know, a lot of the therapy courses in Ireland, I'm actually not quite sure how it works here, but there's a kind of a minimum age limit for starting on some of them, and I was, I think the course that I did was like 24 or 25. I think I was about 26 when I went on it. And I, you know, in some ways it can be limiting because obviously there's people who are mature and ready to begin earlier. But for me, I think it was good to wait. Because, you know, like I said earlier, you know, the idea of kind of going into a group therapy setting, I just would not have been able to do that at a younger age because, you know, sitting in a group talking, not even just about myself, but just talking in a group was my worst nightmare. Like that was the thing that I hated most about university was, say, when we were in small groups and I'd have to present, you know, I would have masses of anxiety before. My voice would be wobbling throughout, you know, I wouldn't be able to think about what I wanted to say. And the idea then of having to kind of open up about who I am as a person and, you know, incredibly personal things about myself in a group. Gosh, I can't even imagine. But that's me, you know, I guess everybody's different. I certainly wouldn't have been ready.
Yeah. Did you find yourself, I mean, I had another insight whilst you were talking earlier. Did you find yourself particularly drawn to psychodynamic approach?
Yes.
Yeah, it was when you were first talking about why you wanted to, like, when you were talking about your recruitment background and then you kind of decided to take a look into therapy, you know, you wanted to understand the, you know, how people work and the kind of relationships between people. And my head was screaming, oh, I bet this lady really found psychodynamic therapy fascinating.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I think it's still the kind of approach that I am most drawn to. Learning about the unconscious, bringing things into our consciousness. I just think that that's such an integral part of therapy. And it's the part that I was most interested in the beginning, and I think probably still now. So yes, so very insightful on your part there too.
Oh, thanks. My therapist, she's psychodynamic, so I'm particularly interested in it myself. Just because I've been kind of in it so long, but also I find that it helps me with like answering some of the really big questions inside of myself. I find it just incredibly useful. The kind of self-awareness and the kind of ability to look at my life like holistically and all of the relationships, I just really get a lot from that, from psychodynamic therapy.
Yes, yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think it's one of those kind of things where, you know, you have to give it time and trust in the process. And, you know, some people, for whatever reason, that's not what they're looking for. So they can enter into psychodynamic therapy and it may be not quite what they are expecting. But I think when you do have that great therapeutic relationship and you're really invested in the process, I mean to me then it's a wonderful thing, and there's so much learning from it.
Yeah, completely agree with that. My next question for you is about integrative therapy approach. So I've mentioned it a few times on the show, so I've kind of given an overview of it, but I don't practice it. I've only learnt about it, and even then it's not been as in depth as the kind of learning that you would have had. So tell the audience a bit about integrative therapy approach, and also you know, what the difference is between what other therapists might be practicing if they're just looking at one approach. You know, would you mind walking us through that?
Sure. So I mean, I'm not sure if I'm kind of repeating some of what you've already mentioned in previous podcasts, but from my take anyway, so integrative therapy is kind of integrating different modalities. So it's, you know, the kind of idea is that, say, one size doesn't fit all. Each kind is different, and different approaches might work depending on the client and what they're wanting to look at and where they're at. And but it also kind of focuses on like the integration of the person, taking fragmented parts of the self and trying to kind of make them whole. So looking at the, you know, the mind, the feelings, the body, and trying to integrate all those parts of the self. So integrative therapy, I mean, and it's as with lots of things in the therapy world, it can actually be depending on who you talk to, people can have kind of different ideas about what it actually is. Because there's also the eclectic approach to therapy, which also involves kind of using different modalities. But from my mind, I mean, and like I said earlier, which is why I was kind of interested in studying it, it's that you learn about lots of different types of therapy. And so when a client comes to you, then you can think, okay, well, what might be the best thing for this person in the moment. I mean, if the client has behavioral problems, you might want to start, you know, on adjusting behavioral function. So maybe looking at something like CBT, like you said, and then moving on to more kind of psychoanalytic, psychodynamic approaches to kind of looking at childhood experiences, and different types of analysis. So, I mean, to me, that was kind of what was the most interesting about it, is that you can, I guess, kind of work creatively from a therapist point of view. It's kind of not one specific rigid approach. And yeah, what was was the other part of your question about the kind of difference between that and...
Yeah, I guess what might be the experience for someone who goes to see someone, for example, say they are trained in psychodynamic only, compared to someone that's... I mean, you've kind of answered it a little bit already, but what's that kind of experience like as opposed to someone who's kind of integrative approach?
I guess not being a kind of specific psychodynamic or CBT therapist, I've only kind of experienced that from the client side, really. When somebody goes to an integrative therapist like myself, you know, I'm kind of, that's what I'm making very clear to them, you know, that the relationship is kind of at the heart of the therapy, and then we can look at different styles to employ depending on what they actually need at the time. And I guess if somebody goes to, say, a CBT therapist, it's made very clear to them that that's the exact type of approach that they're going to be working on. So, you know, they won't be kind of looking at the unconscious, and they won't necessarily be looking at the origins behind some of the behaviours that they're looking to fix, for want of a better word, for wanting to adjust, perhaps might be better. I don't know if that really answers the question, actually.
No, it does. I think, you did a really good job answering that. Because you also offer online therapy as well.
I do, yes, I do indeed.
Walk us through what that looks like then as well.
Yeah, so I kind of came to that from... I'm going to probably ramble now about something.
No, don't worry.
It feels slightly unrelated, but I promise I'll bring it back to the point. Online therapy first came into my consciousness a few years ago. My best friend was living in Cambodia at the time, and she couldn't find an English-speaking therapist where she was living. And she's been, you know, in and out of therapy at different stages of her life, and she was looking for a therapist, and she also mentioned to me that several of her friends were looking for therapists as well. And so some of her friends had decided to start working with people online. And it had something that had never, I had never even heard of before. This is maybe, 6 years ago or so. So I started looking into it because, when I did my training, it was kind of unheard of. Although maybe it was, but it certainly wasn't something that we had been made aware of. So I started looking into it and kind of thinking, gosh, well, like, how could that actually work? You know, there's so much of the therapy that I had been practicing kind of focused so much on kind of what was going on in the room with the client, and would a lot of that be lost? Mm. So, like I said, I kind of started looking into it, and with a skeptical approach, I must be honest. And then, you know, this was before I moved to the UK, and then I did move to the UK and found that, you know, this is the kind of stuff that's being offered on the NHS, and, you know, there's all these kind of websites now that only offer online counselling, and it was something that I really knew nothing about. So so I did a bit of research myself and found that, you know, actually for certain people it can be maybe the only option. And I remember going to a talk a few years ago, I think it was kind of billed as being on the future of psychotherapy, working online, or I don't know exactly what it was called, but that was the idea of it. You know, people, therapists coming along who knew nothing about, say, even telephone therapy or, you know, working online like I do. And I remember, you know, there was, being honest now, in the room at the talk that I was at, everybody there was very sceptical about it, and quite dismissive. And I remember one woman who was working online spoke up, and she said that she was working with autistic teenagers who, you know, they wouldn't go and see a counsellor, and the only way that they felt comfortable talking to her was over instant messenger. And that really just hit home with me, you know, that there, you know, in the same way you say that working in an integrative way, looking at the client as an individual person who not everything is going to work for, you can kind of almost apply that rationale then to working online. You know, it's like, yeah. Well, not everybody's going to be able to go see a counsellor for whatever reason, whether it's that they're living in Cambodia and they can't find an English-speaking therapist, or because they actually can't leave the house.
Sounds like you had a complete paradigm shift.
Absolutely, yeah. After that talk that I went to, the kind of very judgmental view that I had on it, only because it just wasn't something that I had been taught, to be honest. Like, it's kind of as simple as that. Total paradigm shift. So I began kind of looking into training courses because, you know, you can absolutely just start working online without doing any specific training. But I thought, okay, well, if I'm going to do this, I want to do it right, as it were. So I started doing a certificate in online counselling, and it was really excellent. And I work with some clients online now. It is different, of course, than the in-person work, and obviously kind of like safeguarding measures, it's very important that they are implemented and that the boundaries are very clear. But with a client who is able to engage online, you know, there's some people maybe who never speak to somebody over Skype or a similar platform, and they might be very nervous about that, and you know, maybe that might get in the way of the process. But the clients that I work with online now, I mean, I have one client actually who we work online and then also sometimes in person, and she remarked to me that she doesn't notice any real difference in the sessions, whether we're online or in person, I should say.
Wow.
And I kind of found the same. I mean, it's not going to be the same with every client, of course, but with that particular client, I agreed. You know, I didn't notice any huge difference in the quality of the relationship, or you know, the content of the sessions, whether we were together or looking at each other on a screen.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I guess the argument, if I'm playing devil's advocate, I guess the argument from the people who might be resistant to online counselling is, you know, there's certain things in the room that you just pick up on as a therapist that you might lose out on if it's online. You know, like, we're taught to be very sensitive to people's body language, you know, we're taught to be sensitive to mirroring if that's going on, you know, we're taught to be very sensitive to little like social cues and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, there's been times in a session, for example, where my therapist has pointed out something to me, you know, based upon my body language or the tone of my voice or like some like very slight inflection of sorts. And arguably you'd lose out on that through online counselling.
Yeah, and like, being honest, yes, you do lose out on some of those things, but you know, it requires them maybe trying to employ other skills or checking things out a little bit more than maybe you would, like asking more direct questions around that. Like, if I sense maybe a shift in somebody's mood, and to maybe really just ask that outright, whereas in person I might be more inclined to kind of just understand that myself and pick it up myself. So asking more kind of questions around that can be helpful. But there are certain things that perhaps are lost, like body language, like you said. But, you know, it doesn't, to me, to my mind anyway, it doesn't mean that it completely impacts on that relationship.
It sounds like from everything that you've been saying about online therapy, it sounds like it's incredibly useful. And especially that story that you told about being at that conference, it kind of made me realize as well, like, actually it takes me back to my training when you're learning with people with disabilities and how they struggle to access certain services like therapy. It's completely right and proper. I think it's definitely got a place at the table, and I think it's amazing that you've been so forward thinking to bring it into your practice, to be honest.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, because look, and I understand the kind of skepticism. Like I said, I felt the same way myself, and even when I, by the time I had kind of got on board with the idea of you know, talking over video, the idea of kind of instant messaging, I was like, gosh, well, what about boundaries? And, you know, all these kind of things. And like, absolutely, I don't necessarily think that instant messaging is the best thing for everybody. But like, if you're talking about this maybe being the only option that somebody has, surely you can't just discount the idea of it because it's something that maybe we're not that familiar with, you know? You know, I guess kind of even looking at it from a different point of view, therapy, even, okay, maybe it's not just that you can't leave your house or that you can't find a therapist nearby. I mean, for some people, it's really unaffordable to go to a therapist. And maybe if there's these services that offer something at a lower rate, or, you know, something that you can dip in and out of, just because it's not the traditional therapy that we've kind of become accustomed to, it doesn't mean that it can't be helpful. And I mean, I guess, you know, any form, any new form, any new modality of therapy, it's all experimental in the beginning, until it becomes established. So, and I think that's been the kind of, you know, the bedrock of psychotherapy. It moves with the times and it's all ever changing. So to kind of become stuck in a certain mindset kind of goes against what I feel is, you know, the whole kind of essence of psychotherapy and how it does continue to change, you know?
Yeah, that's actually a really good way of explaining it. We should clip that audio. Everyone should listen to that. But it's very true. It's also made me think of how people with like agoraphobia, for example, who, you know, don't want to go outside. That would be a real issue for them, like starting out with like therapy, but then like eventually they might get the kind of, you know, through the online therapy, they might get the kind of confidence to move on to like one to one, like in person stuff.
And actually, just I was just thinking there while you were speaking that I have a friend who sees a therapist, and it was interesting to get some insight from somebody who saw an online counsellor, because I kind of only had experience from this side of the screen, as it were. But my friend sees her therapist in person, but occasionally, because she travels a lot, she sees her therapist online, and she loves the online sessions because she said, you know, I feel quite, not that she doesn't feel safe with her therapist, but she said that she kind of feels that added comfort sometimes where she's either at home, or even if she's traveling, she's kind of, she sits on her bed and she feels nice and cozy, and to her that then becomes another lovely part of the experience where she feels very safe. So it's just interesting to kind of hear that from her side as well.
Yeah, that kind of, that speaks volumes, actually, that, yeah, that would be quite a safe space for someone to be able to, you know, be sat on the end of their bed with, like, a cup of tea and, you know, like, a blanket or whatever. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
And obviously, of course, for some people, home isn't a safe place, and, you know, that's obviously a completely different conversation, but for people who do feel happy and comfortable at home, it can be an extra added kind of security, I guess.
I agree with that. So it's kind of on the same tangent, but this is something else I wanted to ask you, because it's kind of been in the air recently. I've been talking to some therapist friends myself about therapists online, and you know, it's easier now because of social media for people to get access to therapists. And, you know, there's vulnerable people out there that can potentially reach people through a couple of clicks or a couple of swipes on their iPhone. You know, have you experienced vulnerable people approaching you, or do you feel as though you're able to set sort of boundaries online, or, you know, what's your experience like being like?
Do you mean kind of people approaching me, say, through social media and that sort of thing?
Yes, yeah.
I actually haven't had that, to be honest. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram a bit more sporadically than I'd like. But you know, I actually haven't had that experience of kind of getting messaged by somebody looking for therapy who's in crisis or anything like that. I mean, to be honest, if it did happen, I do have very clear boundaries in place. And I guess that's one thing to add to the conversation of around online counselling, is that that's, you know, obviously safeguarding and boundaries, that's incredibly important regardless of the type of therapy, but never more so than in the online world. And you know, there are certain clients that it wouldn't be suitable for. But so yeah, I mean, I guess I do have quite strict boundaries in place around that sort of thing, but actually it has not happened to me.
Yeah, no, it's just interesting. Like I said, I've spoken to about 4 or 5 different therapists. Different people have had kind of different experience. Because like there's been some kind of therapists that I've spoken to who have, they're quite, they've got quite high volume on social media. So for example, they post quite a lot. You know, they're quite active within the community, and then they've got kind of, you know, vulnerable people come into them as a result of that. But then there's other people as well that have got quite high volume and have had a totally different experience. In fact, quite the other way, like yourself, where they've not actually had anyone at all.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, like I said, I mean, I'm not that much of a prolific poster online. You know, I'll tweet about kind of issues and articles that I'm thinking about or that I find interesting or important. But a lot of the engagement that I have is with other therapists.
Yeah, yeah, I find that on Twitter quite a lot. whereas Instagram, I seem to speak with people who are kind of, I guess you'd say they're more like end users of therapy. There's quite an active therapist community on Instagram though. I found quite a lot of really amazing therapists, especially the American ones. You know, and people that I've been able to get on the show as well through Instagram. There's quite a kind of prolific community, which is amazing. I kind of reached out to a couple of them and messaged because I had someone reach out to me who was extremely vulnerable, and the experience kind of shook me a little bit, and I thought, gosh, I'm not even trained, you know, so I wonder what it's like for these people online. I wonder what experiences they've had, you know, therapists. And I had a couple of people say that they'd had similar experiences, had a couple of people say that they'd not experienced it. And a lot of it did come back to boundaries, like you said. And sometimes people are going to reach out, and we've just got to, you know, kind of, if it's like a crisis kind of situation, we've just got to steer them to the kind of services that they need at the time.
Exactly, that's it, the kind of signposting of the correct service. Like I said, that hasn't happened to me, but I guess, yeah, it must be a very real thing, and it must happen quite often. I guess, and that's part of, you know, everybody has a responsibility, I guess, when they put themselves out there in the online world, so to kind of be aware and know what to do if that does happen. So it sounds like you did the right thing.
Thank you. So what kind of new up and coming thing are you most interested in the therapy world? Is there anything that you're kind of looking into to bring into your practice at the moment, or any particular thing that you might have picked up in CPD? Is there anything you're looking to new that you're looking to bring into your practice?
It's a good question, and this is like one of the areas of being a therapist that can become quite overwhelming, because there's always something new, and you know, even when I kind of look into what sort of CPD I want to do next, I end up going down all these different rabbit holes of things like, yes, this is something that I'm fascinated with, or you know, then I'll change my mind. And so
yeah.
I don't know if there's something use. I guess kind of, and it's a whole other conversation, so maybe one for a different time, but I guess something that I'm quite interested in now is, you know, the employment of the kind of social model around mental health rather than the medical model.
Interesting.
And so I'm going to a talk, I think it's next weekend, kind of in that vein, as you know, the kind of this idea that the medical approach maybe isn't always the right one, and even kind of thinking about it in terms of the terminology that people use, you know, like talking about mental illness and how that can be very unhelpful. But it's a kind of area that is quite new to me, to be honest, but one that I'm very, very interested in. So that's an avenue that I'm kind of looking to explore, but because I'm at the kind of early stages of doing it, I feel like I'm definitely not an expert on it. But yeah, I'm quite interested in that, I have to say.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, for those of you that don't know, by the way, CPD is continuous professional development. So therapists have to do a set amount of hours each year, kind of almost topping up their knowledge, finding out about new practices. And kind of like Aoife said, it might be new approaches to therapy, not particularly new models, but it might be a different approach to existing models of therapy. And yeah, it's kind of like keeping on top of what's happening in the industry and, you know, making sure you're kind of giving the best practice to your clients.
Yeah, and you know, it's really wonderful, and it helps you because, you know, being a therapist in private practice, it can, you know, it can be quite isolating, and obviously you see your supervisor, but outside of that, you can kind of feel like you're really going it alone. So having CPD events to go to, whether it's to network or just to feel like you're still kind of part of it and learning and involved, even from that alone, not just the fact that you are obviously learning new skills and new things, but that other side of it is a part that I find hugely important as well.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask about that, the kind of the networking side. I was going to say that must be like quite beneficial to kind of get together and have like these kind of roundtable discussions with other therapists about what they're doing in their practice and what works, what doesn't work.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely. Because like I said, I mean, it is quite isolating. You know, I work in a practice where there's several other therapists, but it isn't always the kind of place where you come and chat, because it's quite funny, really. You know, like, you can never really knock on somebody's door because you don't know if they're in a session with a client. So
yeah.
You just become like ships in the night if your clients are at slightly different times. So I can be working in my practice and never see another therapist on any given day, you know. So yes, the CPD events are definitely important for networking and hearing other people's experiences, because, you know, like I said, it can be isolating, and you can feel sometimes like you're going things alone, or that you're alone in something, and you know maybe nobody else has kind of been in this position. And so to hear other people's experiences can be very reassuring and important, you know.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And is it difficult for you as a practitioner to then incorporate almost like, you know, you've got to be a bit, you've got to wear multiple hats, you've got to be a practitioner, but you're also a businesswoman as well.
Mm-hmm.
What's that dynamic like?
Yes, it's tricky because, you know, yeah, I mean, I trained to become a therapist. I don't have a business degree. I mean, not that you need a business degree to run a business, but, you know, I don't have any kind of business training whatsoever. And even like social media training and marketing and stuff, I have none of that. So thankfully I do have an accountant, so I don't worry about that side of it. But basically every other part of it, of running the business, yeah, it's just me. So it is difficult, because, you know, when I started training, I obviously was a lot younger and wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with it, but, you know, then now I'm in private practice, so I am my own boss, and I don't know if that's something, to be honest, I can't even remember now, it feels so long ago, but I don't know if that's something that I necessarily, was the end goal was to work for wrong, but you do wear a lot of hats, and it's a lot of kind of trial and error, really, you know, because I'm not a marketer, you know, I don't know that much about it, so I have to kind of just think, okay, well, maybe this is something that I can try, or and yeah, the kind of business side of it, you know, you have to be an administrator as well to keep on top of everything, you know. And yeah, it's, you know, and also, you know, people don't, you know, people kind of think of being a therapist as a vocation, and sometimes it's not okay to talk about the fact that actually you're trying to run a business. So it can be a very odd conversation to have with people sometimes as well. You know, it's like, well, no, I do kind of consider it a vocation because I love it and it's very important, and, you know, I don't want to do anything else. But at the same time, I am kind of trying to make a living, and sometimes those two conversations can become a little bit awkward, really. Sometimes people don't want to think about it in those terms, but, you know, it's the reality of it too.
Yeah, they almost want to see it as a service, like going to see the doctor or going to the dentist, but... like, almost like talking about it as if it's a business almost takes them out of that kind of like paradigm in their head.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not like I'll talk to my clients about, you know, the difficulties of doing like invoices or something, you know. But that is true. You know, I have to run this as a business as best I can with the limited business knowledge that I have. But yeah, it can be a bit of a funny one, but I'm getting a lot more used to it now, I have to say, because it's the way the world works.
Yeah.
And so I'm okay with that conversation, but I think in the beginning it did kind of seem like, oh gosh, maybe I shouldn't be talking about it like this.
No, it's an interesting insight, because I've never actually asked that question before. I've had other people on the show about private practice, and you know, we talk, like, we go real hard about, like, therapy, and we talk, like, long and hard about it. But it's, you know, it's so easy to forget that actually that's someone's income, that's someone's business. You know, how does that actually feel from that point of view? So your insights have been really interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm glad, because I think it is a kind of aspect of it that isn't talked about. You know, and it's interesting, like you said, you've kind of talked about private practice and yet it hasn't come up, because it kind of still can feel like a bit of a taboo almost to be able to talk about it like that. But it is the reality, like I said, and, you know, we are trying to make a living. As much as we are in a very fortunate position to do what we do, we still need to pay the bills.
Yeah. Exactly. So I've got a question, and I sometimes ask this at the end of the interviews, and it just it helps get us to know you a bit more and kind of bring you down to earth, see if you like us. So what's like one thing that you're absolutely obsessed with at the moment? So it could be a Netflix TV show, it could be a particular brand of like tea bags that you like, you know, it could be a microphone pillow that you've bought and it helps you sleep on flights better.
Wow, gosh, that is a wide ranging example. What is one thing I'm absolutely obsessed with at the moment? Well, I don't know if this counts, because I'm not sure that I'm obsessed with, but I'm hoping to be.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a good starter. I've decided to, because I'm, you know, I'm always kind of taking up new hobbies, and I'll be into one thing for like a month and then into another thing for maybe a year, and then I won't have a hobby for a while, but I've decided to start watercolour painting.
Wow.
And I bought myself a set of paints and paper and some brushes, and maybe the obsession so far, because I'm a complete novice. I mean, I did some watercolours when I was in school, so I'm not sure that counts. But I've been watching tons and tons of YouTube tutorials on learning how to paint watercolours, and it's amazing. Like, that's the corner of YouTube that I just absolutely love, is like learning different crafts and things. I learned how to crochet a few years ago from watching YouTube tutorials. So now I'm on this kind of watercolour drive, and there are just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of videos, so it's So maybe that's my latest obsession.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. I've got a friend that watches Bob Ross videos before he goes to bed so he can fall asleep.
Oh, I've watched some of those in the class. He's got a very soothing voice. I can see why your friend does that.
Yeah, yeah. He says, like, it's just so relaxing and, like, he's just always so happy and, like, he just
very
loves
wholesome.
Painting. Yeah, very wholesome. Yeah.
And I felt like, I mean, my, like, it's the extent of my watercolour painting so far has been to kind of try the different brushes and mix colours together and, you know, just paint strokes onto a page, essentially. But I noticed already how relaxing it is and how kind of mindful it is. So I'm hoping that that's going to become my new thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. So, one last question before we close out.
Yeah.
How in the world do we pronounce your name? You've got a very interesting name.
If you were talking to me in Ireland as a fellow Irish person, it's unfortunately not that interesting. It's quite a common name, but yeah, so it's pronounced Aoife. I tell people, I have a kind of little spiel about how to pronounce it, because sometimes, and it's funny, because clients can sometimes, you know, they can find it a little bit awkward or unnerving if they can't pronounce it correctly. So I try to be as helpful as I possibly can, and actually on my website I have some frequently asked questions, and it's one of them.
Yes.
So I tell people that it's like Eva with an F, so that kind of makes it a bit easier, and it is the Irish for Eve or Eva. So or else if people are into football, it's like FIFA without the first F.
Yeah.
So
Eva. Oh, that's that's easy. Easy to remember.
But I know when people kind of look at it on a page, it's like, okay, well, there's a lot of vowels there.
Yeah.
They all go together.
Because it's spelled A-O-I-F-E, isn't it?
Yes, that's
yes.
It.
Yeah. Oh, I got that right.
Yeah, spot on. Well done.
Oh, thanks. So
you're one of the few.
One of the few that actually got it.
Yeah.
So if people want to get hold of you, so if people want to go onto your page, your website, if people want to find you on social, what's your website and what are your handles where people can get to you?
Sure. So my website is my name, which obviously is the minefield with all the different vowels. So it's Aoife and my surname is Kinsella, which is also something that's often mispronounced as Kinsella.
Yeah, I think I did that. Sorry.
No, that's okay. I think, in fairness, I think that there are people in this country who have the surname Kinsella. So I'm not sure it is a mispronunciation. I think it's just a slightly different, it's a regional thing. So it's aoifekinsella.com. And then I'm on Instagram and on Twitter, and it's at Aoife Therapy. And then on Instagram, it's Aoife Therapy.
Brilliant.
So relatively easy to find me, I think, as long as you can get past the vowels, get them in the right order.
Brilliant. I will, after this, I will jump onto Instagram and give you a follow.
Lovely.
Because I've got you on Twitter, but I don't think I've got you on Instagram.
I must admit, I'm quite sporadic in my posting, but
that's all right.
I always have good intentions.
So, honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I think people will agree that this has been really insightful. We've gone through a lot today. We've gone really round the houses. You know, we've talked about integrative therapy. We've gone through online therapy, some of the pros and cons of just therapists being online in general. And we've spoken about private practice, and, you know, we found out that you're obsessed with watercolours, which is amazing.
Something I wouldn't have said 3 weeks ago, but hopefully will in 3 months' time.
And
from
my point of view, it's been amazing having you on. You're very insightful, very self-aware, you know, very approachable, and I've just really enjoyed having you on the show. And you know, I encourage people to go and check you out on social, and just really, really appreciate having you on.
Well, I appreciate appreciate being invited on, Dan. I've really enjoyed it, I have to say. Really interesting conversation and kind of twists and turns that maybe I didn't know we were going to go down, and that's all part of the fun. I really enjoyed it.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. This has been episode 90, can you believe it, of the podcast. And until next time, this has been Aoife Kinsella with Dan Udell. Peace out.